Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. This is Ashlyn Dave. Thanks for downloading the show. I hope you enjoy it. This week, I'm going to be talking about the Lower Potomac River Marathon, which I ran this past weekend. It was a small race, about 200 runners. It was a club race for the Chesapeake Bay Running Club. And this, I guess, the race served as their club race, I guess, to get points. Anyway, it was a full marathon, and it was in an area of Maryland, which is on the Lower Potomac River. I guess that's why it's named that. St. Mary's County, and it was somewhat of a nice area all the way down at the end, which was the first half of the race on St. George Island. The second half of the race was more on a rural highway with a really wide asphalt shoulder, which was fine. It just wasn't very picturesque. But I didn't go down there for the scenery. I went down just for the distance. I guess I went north and southeast after I went north. The funny thing about this race was that I accidentally made a PR. And because I didn't set out to do that right at the beginning. And it's kind of an interesting story, which, of course, I'll share as the podcast goes on. But my goal in running the Lower Potomac River Marathon was to get in a very long training run. Grant and I had initially discussed riding up there together. I think my friend Shelly had also talked about doing the same race. She's suffering from an injury right now. She's making a recovery. But something came out and Tom wasn't able to make it. So I decided to go up there anyway because it was an inexpensive race. I wasn't that far from home. But I ended up getting a hotel room because of the time change. I was just going to get up really early in the morning and drive up. There was a 7:15 start time, but with the clocks being, we had to turn the clocks forward. I just felt that I might as well just go up the night before, get a little familiar with the course, and which is what I did. So I drove up on Saturday and crossed over the Potomac River. And once into Maryland, I just took rural roads kind of in a southeast direction and ended up in a place called California, Maryland, which is a town. And that's where my hotel was. And it was a Super 8. It was only $66. But I tell you, it was probably one of the nicest Super 8, well, actually the only Super 8 I guess I've ever been in. But it was pretty nice. It looked nice from the outside. The room was very clean. It was plenty of room. It wasn't a suite or anything like that. I just basically needed a place to sleep for the night. But the race was in its, I'll talk more about that in a little bit. The race is in its fifth year, and everybody seemed to know each other. You know, I guess if the Richmond Roadrunners, you know, had a marathon or any marathons here in town, I mean, lots of people know each other, but I didn't know anybody from up that way. There were a couple people, I was looking at the race results, there was one person from Mechanicsville, which is in Hanover County. And I think one other person from Richmond, but I didn't, and I recognized a couple people, but I had never met them before, and I did not notice them until after the race was over, and I was kind of on my way out of there. But anyway, I drove up there. I only took a couple hours. I went by myself. I dropped my stuff off at the Super 8 and checked in, and then I headed about 20 minutes south to the Paul Hall Center for packet pickup. Now, the Paul Hall Center was pretty impressive. It's a this is where mariners learn how to operate commercial ships, the whole shipping industry, ocean liners, everything that goes on in the ocean, people that are work in the ocean on boats, this is where they learn their craft. And I wish I could remember the full name of the facility, but it was had several high-rise buildings. Was kind of a miniature port, so to speak, for the training of people to learn how to, do everything from the executive operation of ships to, loading containers and taking them off. It seemed like they had everything there. And this was in Piney Point, Maryland. So this was kind of the major thing that was going on in Piney Point. The campus had huge buildings. It looked like the I think it was a paramilitary type of facility because the students were wearing uniforms. It was very clean. Everything was very clean. And packet pickup was in a small conference room of the facility, very easy to find. It was very low key. You had to go through a security gate to get in, but that wasn't any problem. And it was hardly a packet to pick up. There was some Clif Bars, some other stuff, some other freebies. Got a map of the course. The race director encouraged everybody to check it out, and they had a sign on the table that said no headphones. And anyway, it was in a real conspicuous place. And the race website had mentioned the risk of being disqualified if you were caught wearing headphones, or earbuds for an iPod. And even if they saw you wearing them in post-race photos, you were going to be disqualified. And it was just described that the reason for this is because the course was open to traffic. So I figured I might try to get away with it anyhow. I planned to carry my iPod with me because I was by myself. I didn't know anybody, and I figured if I needed a mental lift in the later part of the race, I would just use that. So I wasn't really that concerned about it. I'd already seen the second half of the course because it was along the rural road that I drove down, which is Route 249, and that's the road that I drove in on. And I saw that the shoulders of the road were very wide. Essentially, it was another travel lane of the shoulder. And as I found out when I was running the marathon down there, a lot of cyclists use that road because it's a straight shot with only a couple hills all the way out to St. George Island, which is very picturesque, very scenic. So these shoulders were perfect for cyclists. Anyway, it didn't look like it was going to be any problem. It was slanted a little bit, but not too bad. So that was going to be the second half of the course. The majority of the first half of the course was on St. George Island itself, and it was a pretty remote place, only a couple handfuls of large houses, small cottages. Very scenic. I was driving around it. I looked forward to running along the little island roads in the morning. At some points, the island was only as wide as the road, and it looked like the banks of the river had been built up. So clearly, the road almost looked maybe even with the level of the river. And this is the Potomac River on one side, and I think the Patuxent River on the other. It was pretty cool. You really felt like you're on an island, no doubt. But anyway, since some of the proceeds of the event were to benefit the Piney Point Lighthouse and Museum, I decided to check that out. The race course actually looped out by the lighthouse anyway, so I thought it'd make sense to get familiar with that part of the course. Not that I would get lost or anything, but just to know where the course was headed. And along Lighthouse Road, which is what it was called, there was some really neat houses that were right on the river, right on the road. And almost all of the homes appeared to be renovated, but you could tell they were older because of the architecture. And this kind of seemed to be the money area of Piney Point. And what that area, and with the exception of the Paul Hall Center, everything else was kind of a little bit of an armpit. It was just not a real nice area, except for these. Going out Lighthouse Road was pretty nice. I mean, you could tell there was some more expensive homes out there. So I checked out the Lighthouse Museum, and there was a group that was forming of runners that had formed in the shop, and where the museum lady was going to take us over to the lighthouse. So we did, and it was a couple people got to climb at a time. It was pretty cool. It wasn't a real tall lighthouse. It was very small compared to some of the lighthouses that I've seen down on the Outer Banks in North Carolina, which are very tall. This one, I don't remember how high it was, but it wasn't really all that impressive with its size. But its construction was pretty cool. I climbed up it, and the temperature outside was in the mid-70s, and inside the lighthouse was very cool, temperature-wise. It was really neat because I guess it was all brick and it stays cool in there. Anyway, I thought it was pretty cool. I took some photos and learned a few things about the lighthouse. It's the oldest lighthouse on the Potomac River, and it was built in 1836. And apparently, that particular area is where some former presidents, going way back to the old days, I guess, where presidents sometimes would come down and vacation. So it must have been better. Must have been that must have been before it turned into an armpit. So, feeling a little enlightened, I decided to head back to the motel and watch some TV. ate some tacos, you know, watched TV, watched movies, and turned my clock ahead and stayed up way too late. I had really no concerns about the race in the morning. I was not worried about it at all. I had no anxiety. It was very relaxed. And you know, I woke up early, checked out the Weather Channel. The forecast was for temperatures in the mid-70s, and it was 62 degrees by the time I left at 6:15 a.m. So I knew we were in for a hot day, but it was Weather Channel called for partly cloudy, which also means partly sunny, but at least partly cloudy is better than full sun. So anyway, we got to the starting line, and it was dark right at the start, and the race director mentioned again about headphones, and she said that your name would be stricken from the results if you were caught wearing headphones, and just very strict about this. And I didn't see anybody wearing headphones, so I guess they follow the rules in Maryland. I know if that was in Virginia, people would just balk at it, but I didn't want to get disqualified, so I didn't even bother with it. But I found out later why, and it's because these motorcyclists that were, I guess, working as race marshals, I'm not really sure what they were doing, but on some of the real narrow roads on St. George Island, they really didn't, they were getting kind of close to the runners, and you could barely hear them coming up from behind because their motorcycles were so quiet. So with headphones on, it would have been pretty bad. If you'd taken one step to the left or the right, if you're running in the middle of the road and those motorcycles are coming by, you'd be clobbered. So I actually understood why they didn't want anybody wearing headphones. It just didn't make, I just couldn't see that right at the beginning. So I settled into a comfortable pace, and after 25 minutes I did my 5-minute walk, and this was what I had planned to do for the whole race. 25 minutes of running, 5 minutes of walking, you know, even in the same thing over and over and over till I got to the end, because it was an experiment to see how I felt after that. But I didn't just, you know, stroll along when I was walking. I was doing the power walking, kind of had what I've been doing in training, and you know, using my arms to kind of sling me forward. And but what was really weird was walking after 25 minutes, because I wasn't tired at all, but I, you know, all these people were just passing me, and I caught up with them after I started running again. But it was weird just to be walking that soon into a race. And I keep saying race because I was using it as a training run, but it did turn into a race later, which I'll get to. I kind of started getting hung up with the same folks who were running a similar pace. There was some little conversation going on back and forth, but I didn't really get involved in too much conversation because after 25 minutes I was walking, and those same people would go up ahead of me, and then I'd catch up with them again, and we'd exchange jokes about what I was doing. And finally, I told one person that what I was training for, and I didn't really want to sound arrogant or anything. I just said, you know, I'm just trying to see how fresh I can feel at the end of this marathon by doing the 25 and 5. Anyway, after a few repetitions of the same intervals, I kind of stopped caring about what other people might have been thinking about me doing this method. I didn't really know them. They didn't know me. I was already pissed off at the race director for her just diatribe about headphones, because it really wasn't that necessary. You know, you make the announcement and you let it go. And, well, it wasn't a long diatribe, but it just seemed, she's kind of nasty about it. And, you know, at the beginning of a marathon, you don't really need to get nasty with anybody. So I don't really quite understand why she was so nasty about it, but, you know, it kind of made me angry. And, I had to get past that. I know it sounds kind of silly, at that point I'd already decided these people would never see me up here again. I wasn't going to come back and do that race. So I completed the loops on St. George Island and then on Lighthouse Road. It was really scenic and picturesque on St. George Island. It really was. The sun was coming up, although it was cloudy. It was pretty, and it was a real good way to start the race. It was just, some of these roads were just so narrow, there's two cars wouldn't have been able to pass each other. And I think the reason they do that part of the race first is because there wouldn't have been enough room for cars and runners. So we essentially took the whole lane, and so that made sense, and that's why that was the first part of the race. I'd read on marathonguide.com that some people had complained that should be the second part of the race, but with some people finishing in the you know, 5 hours to 6 hour range. It would, the runners would interfere with cars and vice versa. So, I mean, that made sense to me. So I performed those loops. I was keeping a real good average pace. Had something like a 2:07 half marathon split. But I didn't really have a plan for how fast I was going to run during the 25-minute run intervals. I planned just to run how I felt at the time. And if that was fast, then I'd run fast. If it was, you know, slower, I would run slower. I promised myself I was going to stick to the 25 and 5 just to see what happened. And that's what I did. It was around the 15-mile mark, I had actually started to figure out, finally able to just focus on my split times, because I was just, you know, essentially running 25 and 5. I was watching my time. I wasn't watching my splits. I didn't, nothing, you know, my Garmin wasn't beeping and telling me how fast I just ran the last mile. I was going out there very relaxed and just going along with my 25 and 5 to see what I could do. And I was noticing that at some points, once my Garmin caught up to my pace after several minutes in the run interval, that my pace was just over a 9 minute mile. So I was running some pretty fast miles compared to the 10 minute miles or 10 minute miles that I'm kind of used to, and so that kind of made up for the walking. But I was able to figure out that around the 15 mile mark that I had a pretty good shot at running a personal record for the marathon, and it was at that point that I decided that I was going to turn this from a run into a race and see just how much I could beat my former personal best I had for the marathon. So I thought, why not? You know, I mean, it was a good day. I was feeling good. You know, even on some training runs, you run faster than you normally do. So I just thought, hey, why not? I'm out here. I drove all the way up here. I'm having a great time. I feel good. Just the 25 and 5 was really working for me. I did find myself walking slower than I was at the beginning, but I wasn't running any slower. And that really was really surprising me, because during the runs, I'd run for probably 10 minutes, and then I would start checking in on my watch to see how much time I had to go. And all I focused on was getting to that 20 run as hard as I could, you know, within reason, knowing that I still had, you know, 11.2 miles to go this was around the 15-mile mark. Just run as hard as I could for till 25 minutes was up, and then I knew I had a 5-minute walk break. And so I was talking with one lady during the race, and she had asked me, well, why do you walk for 5 minutes? Because I think the Galloway is 9 and 1, or there's different variations of that. And I told her that walking 1 minute was too slow, and I mean, was not enough time. And I told her that I would prefer to run harder for longer and have more time to rest. And I tell you, that 5 minute walk break really, really, really did make a difference. All told, for the whole race, I actually walked for 40 minutes. You know, every other 25 minutes. Around the 20-mile mark, I had very little discomfort. And I'd had a big week. I'd already run over 20 miles for the week. The marathon distance was going to be capping off a 54-mile week, which is just huge for me. That's not, you know, normal for me. I'm really getting my mileage up there for this ultra in May. And I actually ran almost 6 miles the day before I left for the marathon, just to make my weekly mileage. And this was supposed to be a double long run sandwich, a 22-miler on Saturday and a 10-miler on Sunday. So I just did it the opposite and did a shorter run on Saturday, followed by the full marathon. And I was completely surprised at my energy level in the later stages of the race. I just couldn't believe it. I didn't have the mental ups and downs that I've experienced in previous marathons. I didn't have the physical ups and physical feeling of being drained or just exhausted or I'll never finish. I never got negative. I stayed very positive during the whole race, and I didn't even worry about the iPod. I got over that, you know, hours beforehand, and actually listened to it on the way home, all the stuff that I missed. But I didn't need it, because I just started focusing on the next person in front of me, trying to catch up to them. And so it did turn. It turned from a long training run into a race against the clock, and I finally came in at 4:17:37, which was almost 4 minutes faster than my the former PR I had in Charlotte, which was back in December. So I had a hell of a day. It was, I mean, at mile 25, I was about at 4 hours and 7 minutes, and I knew I could almost walk the last mile and still break 4:21.04, which is my former PR. So I just took it easy, ran in the easy last mile. I still had some work left in my legs when I got to the end, which was the whole point. I didn't want to have this feeling that I had to collapse when I got to the end. The heat never really got to me. I did sweat a lot, but I ran with my water bottle and just constantly drank. So much so that I had to stop 3 times and go to the bathroom. So I guess that was a good sign. I was glad it was over. I was just stunned with my finishing time. I never thought that I would break 4 hours and 20 minutes, especially after I ran Charlotte. And I guess, I don't know, maybe I'll try the marathon again with this method and run harder. But I don't know. It was it feels weird for me to set a new record by doing all this walking. So that makes me wonder. I wonder if I could run hard. Well, you can't. That's the whole problem. You can't run hard for several hours and then walk for the last 40 minutes. That'd be interesting, wouldn't it? Anyway, there were a couple of good things after the race. They had a sit-down buffet lunch inside the Paul Hall Center, which apparently the Paul Hall Center also houses the Chesapeake Culinary Institute. And they were responsible for the food. It was a buffet. They had salad, lasagna, different types of lasagna, breads. I just kind of focused on the lasagna and just ate that. And that was after we had access to the locker rooms. They had towels. The locker rooms were very clean. So I went ahead and, you know, I'd already known about that. So I brought a change of clothes and felt very fresh when I went out to eat lunch. And, of course, I didn't know anybody. So and everybody was sitting with their buddies at the tables. So I found a table that didn't have anybody at it, and I just set my bag at it. And went and got my food and came back. And eventually a guy sat down with me. And this guy, you know, just met him. I don't think he listens to the podcast, but I'm not going to mention his name just in case he stumbles upon it. But he had a real foul mouth for somebody that I just met and for who just met me. I mean, he was using the F word and GD this and GD that. And he had run a couple marathons and he lived in the area. And it was just cracking me up, just how he's just using so much profanity. So that was pretty funny. And anyway, that was one thing I remembered from it. There was also a couple other things. Neither the medal nor the T-shirt were really anything to write home about. Nothing special. And what do you expect for $45? But at least you got a finishing medal, and it had a cool logo on it, and it was metal, so it was pretty neat. There was a couple 50 staters that were there, and I kind of started and ran with some of these people, listened to the conversation, and I mean, one guy had run a marathon the day before, or a 50K the day before, and a couple of them were just talking about, I mean, they were reeling off names of marathons, and I think most of them were in West Virginia. There must be a lot of trail races up there. But one of the guys, when I was actually leaving in my car, he was still on the home stretch, so he was clearly a guy that just gets out there, loves to run all day just for the love of it, and I thought that was really cool. There was another 50-stater, I think it was a 50-stater, that I met at the museum. Well, I didn't meet her. They weren't very friendly. I met or ran into them at the museum shop early the day before, and when we climbed up the lighthouse, she got out this little figure of Flat Stanley and had her husband or whoever she was with taking pictures of Flat Stanley in the lighthouse. So it was kind of weird, and I overheard her saying how many different places Flat Stanley had been. And so I was thinking about doing a search on the internet to see if she's got a website. If she does, I'll put a link in the show notes of this show. But if there's nothing in the show notes, then it means I couldn't find it. I don't know what her name was. I think she was a 50-stater, and a lot of those people run pretty, these two people were running kind of slow. Not that that really matters, but I think they just do it, you know, because they love running marathons. But when I was during one of the points, one of the loops, you pass the other runners going the opposite direction. I passed her, and I asked her if she had Flat Stanley with her, and she just looked at me like I didn't know what I was talking about. And so maybe you know, she just thought I was some kind of freak or something. But overall, I had a good time. I wouldn't go repeat that race, only because I don't plan to really repeat any marathon except for Richmond. I'm going to try to repeat that this year because that was the first one I ran, and hopefully that'll be the 10th by the time I get to it. But I don't think I would go up and do that one again, only because it was probably the most boring back end of a marathon I've ever done, or of any run. And without the use of being allowed to use an iPod or something just to stimulate myself, because I got stretched out. I was not really running with anybody at all. So I wouldn't repeat the race. I'm not knocking it. It's just that I don't have plans to really repeat any race unless there's a real good reason. And the whole headphones thing just kind of rubbed me the wrong way. The U.S. Track and Field organization allows it if you're not competing for prize money. So I think any race that and you're taking your own risk. You should be. They make you sign a waiver saying if you're going to wear headphones, then you'll keep the volume down to a level where you can still hear traffic. You know, people driving their car with the radio on, and you know, pedestrians should be able to do the same thing. That's just my take on it. So anyway, that is my race report. I don't think I left anything out. It was a pretty, you know, it was well done. The water stops were plentiful. They were at every 2 miles. They had something called Ultima Replenishment, I think was the drink, which I did like. I do have to say one thing. At one of the stops, the Ultima stuff had been clear all the way up to this point where the American Red Cross had set up a stop. And so I'm running up to it, and I'll say, I'll take some Ultima. And I was just pouring it in my water bottle real quick, and so I could keep running, because I didn't, I never really got to any water stops when I was walking. But the stuff the lady was getting ready to pour into my cup was not clear. It was something else. And I told her, no offense, I said, but I don't know what that is. That doesn't look like the stuff I've been drinking for the last 15 miles. So I went without it there. Some of the other stops had it. So I'm guessing the Ultima Replenish or Replenisher, whatever it's called, I guess it's a clear drink. I'll have to check that out too, but it tasted pretty good, and maybe that helped me out, who knows. Well, I got several real good emails over this week, and I'm going to save those for next week's show, otherwise I'll go way too long. Dr. Smitty, Matt, several others, I'll get to those, and you guys will definitely talk about those emails next week. Appreciate the emails. If you want to send me an email and you haven't before, you can do that at ashlanddave@gmail.com. Happily receive all emails and respond to every one of them. I thank you very much for sending in your feedback and your comments. It's nice to know that there are people listening to the podcast. We've got a couple big races coming up in this area. One is at the tail end of this month, and the other is the first week of next month. March 28th is a Monument Avenue 10K. It's the largest, or the fifth largest 10K in the country. I think it's going to clear 30,000 runners this year. I won't be participating in that, only because my wife is, and Mrs. Ashland Dave, and she is going to be participating with a group of her, with her running group. So obviously I'll, you know, be having my daughter, and we'll probably go down and watch. And it's very possible that later that day I'll be doing an adventure run from my house to my parents' house in Chesterfield, which is about 31 miles. I'm saying that now only because it kind of falls, that weekend falls in my training schedule when I need to do a 31 miler. Anyhow, I'll talk about that more later. On April 4th, 2009 is the Ashland Railroad Run, and at the tail end of this podcast I'll have an audio commercial for that my daughter and I produced, which was a lot of fun. And Dr. Smitty had sent me an email. He's going to actually come and run that race, but I'll talk about that more next week. Dr. Smitty, I'll have a special message for you so we can meet up and meet in person, and I can cheer you on in the race. I'll be running that myself. I guess, I'm not sure, I'll probably end up running with my wife or with some other friends and have a lot of fun with it. That's going to be a great day. We'll just hope for good weather. It's the 31st running of the Ashland Railroad Run. But anyway, those two big races are coming up. They're back-to-back weekends, and they're both 10Ks, and of course one is much larger than the other, but they're both in the air. And we're hoping in Ashland to capitalize on the various training programs that are out there that people are participating in, try to get them to run the Ashland race. But of course, we can't handle 30,000 people. So we'll take as, well, I think we had just over 500 last year, but we'll take as many as we can. So, all right, well, that's it for this week. I'll be back next week with another podcast. And I don't know what I'm going to be talking about yet, but it might be, I've been thinking about doing one about Stand Up and Be Counted. And see if I can get the people that listen to the show to send me an email so I know where you're at. I get about 200 downloads a week. Sometimes as the weeks go on, the more people download the show. But it looks like there's about 200 subscribers. And I'm just kind of curious who they are. So maybe I'll do a promotion on that. That's just an idea. So this is Ashland Dave. I'm coming at you from Ashland, Virginia, reminding you to run to the finish and keep on running. Y'all take care.
The 2009 Ashland Railroad Run. Join us on Saturday, April 4th, for the 31st running of one of Virginia's oldest road races alongside the tracks and through the historic town of Ashland, Virginia, the center of the universe. This race is one of the Virginia's first eco-friendly races and the area's longest running 10K. Special door prizes will be given for those bringing a pair of running shoes to recycle, and a green fair will be held on the lawn of the historic Hanover Arts and Activity Center. Be sure to come to the center of the universe too on April 4th and race. For more information, go to www.hanoverarts.org and click under News and Happenings. I ran the kids race last year and it was fun. Run Ashland first. See you there.